Please pray with me. Living One, may the words of my mouth and the meditations of our hearts be acceptable in your sight. Amen. We just heard a lot of readings, a lot of images, a prophecy of a wise ruler. We heard about angels bringing greetings and guidance and good news, dreams that guide and give a warning, wise men or astrologers who travel a very long way to find an infant king, shepherds at the bottom of the social and religious heap who see things that mystics long to see, rulers in high places making decrees and protecting themselves from imagined danger. This is a collection of images that spark the imagination, that give texture to an old, familiar story, that capture the longings and fears and discoveries of humanity. And tonight, we gather amidst light and song, word and prayer, to hear again that great story and reflect upon its meaning from within the context of our own lives, our own stories. For as we hear these texts and sing these songs, I hope we have dropped down a little bit from the adrenaline rush of the holiday shopping season that we've all been engaged in. Admit it. Can't get an amen from anybody. Okay. And hopefully we feel in our own bodies our own watchfulness, our own anxiety and fear and weariness, our as yet unmet hopes and dreams for ourselves and for this world. The memories of Christmas past return with the people who were and no longer are with us, and the places which were and perhaps no longer exist. Returning to our consciousness is our own foolishness, our own wisdom, with the requisite twinges of regret and the smiles. No matter what we believe or the content of our lived experiences, despite cynicism and discouragement, we too desire love and peace and truth and wholeness. And you and I are very capable of naming those forces of selfishness and inertia within ourselves that militate against the vision of shalom that could be, if only. If only. Mary's pregnancy becomes our own slow maturing generative power, yearning to give birth to a vision that comes to us unbidden as the angel surprised Mary, gave her unexpected news. As she had to decide yes or no, so do we also. For God does not force us to go in any particular way. So here we are, hearts beating, lungs breathing, hoping that Christ will make himself known in the words and prayers and songs and silences, so that we too may say yes or no, or even perhaps. As the monastic liturgy says, turn toward us, Lord, if only for a moment. Hurry to your servants. It's as though we're saying, come on, Divine One, speak to us through what we see and hear and think and dream and imagine, that we might know that your love and wisdom is with us along the way, and that this celebration somehow holds your presence, but not in the sense of capturing you, for you are greater than our ability to put you in a box and tie it with a bow and say, here, this is God and all of God, and there's nothing else to know or learn. I love St. Paul's letter to the ancient Christian community in Colossae. He, that is Christ, is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn of all creation. For in him all things in heaven and on earth were created, things visible and invisible, whether thrones or dominions or rulers or powers. All things have been created through him and for Him. He Himself is before all things, and in Him all things hold together. We cannot box in such a Christ. Our worship tonight points back to what God proclaimed to human beings long ago and far away, and continues to proclaim to us here and now. And I think by gathering, we are declaring that in the midst of our humanity, there remains the truth that loving intention and compassionate wisdom are more powerful and enduring than all that divides and impoverishes and diminishes humankind. We are declaring that the ancient truths, hidden within the garb of imageful story, remain our truths, though we must work to reveal them and give them meaning afresh. And we must put them into practice every moment, every day, in every place. And this is because of who God is: unconditional love, endless wisdom, foundational truth, the creator of all that is seen and unseen. And also because of who we are: broken and incomplete and wonderful and skilled as we are. And if we do not believe that this ancient wisdom has anything to do with us, then we relegate it to its dusty place on the bookshelf, where it is of no use. Karl Rahner wrote, "Ask not, doubt not. You have, my heart, already chosen the joy of Advent. As a force of your own uncertainty, bravely tell yourself, it is the Advent of the great God." Say this with faith and love, and then both of the past of your life, which has become holy, and your life's eternal, boundless future will draw together in the now of this world. For then into the heart comes the one who is Advent, the boundless future who is already in the process of coming, the Lord, who has already come into the time of the flesh to redeem it. And when He comes into our heart, drawn there by our invitation, which is itself a gift of God, then we understand that we are not alone and we are not without hope. Christmas happens for us when we receive the gift that cannot be purchased in any store at any price. Charles Borromeo, who is an Italian cardinal during the 16th century, wrote this: "The Church asks us to understand that Christ, who came once in flesh, is prepared to come again. When we remove all obstacles to His presence, He will come, at any hour, any moment, to dwell spiritually in our hearts, bringing with Him the riches of His grace." This is a truth that is not understood or accepted by the King Herod in each one of us. That place within us that represents the King Herod of the Christmas story. For part of us does not want to open our fists so that they become instruments of welcome and peace. Choosing the way of the astrologers or the wise men or whoever they were, and of Mary, is the way to Christmas. Perhaps you know the story of Mitsuo Fuchida, squadron leader of the Japanese force that struck Pearl Harbor. Years later, looking back on that day, Fuchida said this: "We hate and are hated in return, and then we hate more. And we have all seen where that can lead. But," he said, "we love, and we are likely to be loved in return, which begins the cycle of love." In the late 40s, he heard some Japanese POWs returning from U.S. detainee camps. And they were talking about an American teenager who had visited them. She brought them soap and toothpaste and asked what else she could do for them, but the prisoners didn't trust her. Finally, they asked why she had been so kind to them, her enemies. She told them that her parents had been Christian missionaries in Japan and in the Philippines, and they had been murdered, beheaded by Japanese soldiers who thought they were spies. The girl's life began to be consumed by hate until she was able to reconnect with what her parents had taught, love of enemies and forgiveness. She gave aid and comfort to an enemy to honor her parents and because she was a Christian. Fuchida was deeply moved by this story, and eventually he too became a Christian out of a need to heal the hate in his own life. He said, "I have participated in the cycle of hate for much of my life. For the rest of my life, I want to begin the cycle of love as often and in as many places as possible." And so when he traveled in the United States, every time he met a Pearl Harbor survivor, Fuchida bowed slightly to him and greeted him in Japanese and shook his hand. This was Christmas in the flesh. The day before Pearl Harbor Day is December 6th. It's the anniversary of the death, about 360 of the Common Era, of Nicholas of Myra. Nicholas of Myra. We know him as Saint Nicholas, Santa Claus. His Greek name is Nikolaos, meaning victory of the people. And he was born in 270 in Asia Minor to parents who had prayed long to God to give them a child. Even as a young person, he became known for his zeal in helping the unfortunate and oppressed. He had a reputation for secret gift-giving. In his native city, there lived a poor nobleman who had three marriageable daughters, and he had no dowry for any suitor. So the desperate idea struck him to sacrifice the innocence of his daughters to gain the needed money. When Nicholas became aware of this, he went by night and threw a bag containing as much gold as was needed for a dowry through the window. And this he repeated the second night and the third night. After he died, people in the region continued to give to the poor anonymously, and such gifts are still often attributed to Saint Nicholas. On a certain occasion, he was imprisoned for his faith, and as a bishop, he attended the Council of Nicaea, where the Nicene Creed was written. He died a quiet death in his episcopal city, uttering the words, "Into your hands I commit my spirit." Again, Christmas in the flesh. Now, you and I don't have to be Nicholas of Myra, Charles Borromeo, Mitsuo Fuchida, a shepherd or an astrologer or a wise person. We don't have to be at the top of the social and religious heap, and we don't have to be at the bottom. We don't have to be wishing we could escape from our predicament. We don't have to be in the position of trying to hold on to everything we can possibly grasp. We do not have to have visions or incredible dreams. We are who we are. And we can make choices as we encounter the presence and voice of God in the moment. Chances are that neither you nor I will be remembered as famous people. But the important thing is that we do our best and most difficult and most rewarding thing and change our inner world with the help of God. And as we do that good work, we are able to change the world around us just a little bit. And thus the Christ child will be honored. And you and I will be Christmas in the flesh. And that will be enough. May it be so. Amen.